Hello, everybody. This is Amanda Dennis, and so we meet again. It's really nice to have you all on the call, and we have a very, very, very special guest today on our call. Miss Natalia Rose has joined us, and she's going to be with us for the first 30 minutes or so. So we are going to maximize our time with her. Natalia, are you there?
Hi, Amanda. I am here. Thank you for that very sweet introduction. I'm very, very happy to be here. I wanted to be on the last several calls, but baby called, so.
Yes.
But hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be here with you all today. And Amanda, thank you. Is Anna with us as well?
I see her on the dashboard. And Anna, can you hear us okay?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes. Hi, Anna. Great.
Hi.
All right. So, what we wanted to do today was really just jump into questions since we have Natalia on the phone. And we will open up the call to you all who have made the time to be on this call live. So if you have a question, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. And if you think of one as we go along too, at any time you can press 1 on your keypad. And then we also have some questions from the community that we pulled. So I will go to those if...
Amanda, I just have something as we're getting questions coming in. Wanted to mention. I really wanted to, first of all, thank you and Anna so much for the amazing job that you guys have done in presenting these calls the last, the last handful of times when we've had them. And it's just been so incredibly meaningful, and I've, of course, listened to them all, and it's just meant a great deal to me that this has been kept alive at a time when I've been, needed elsewhere. So really, really big, big thank you to both of you so, so much, and to Joanna as well, who's been critical in just orchestrating everything. So there's that, and then I also just wanted to say that, I go out in the community a lot, and there's so many times I want to jump in and answer a question or respond, and most of the time I'm just really enjoying everyone's, everyone's back and forth and supporting each other, and the questions are answered superbly by so many of the members. And that's wonderful. And sometimes I can't respond. Sometimes I respond to one, I think, oh gosh, well, I should respond to all of them, and they'll wonder why I'm responding to this one. So it's a bit of a catch-22 in that. But I just want to say that I really do feel the spirit of the community, and I'm right in there, desiring to continue to read your questions and the responses. And I want to thank Brian so much for his very, very thoughtful responses, particularly about water recently. There was one, someone had a question about edema, and she was finding that she was having edema since she started cleansing, and he just gave the most thorough, astute answer, and you can look back on that. Forgive me, I don't have the computer in front of me now, but I forget what the question is, but if one of you knows. But basically, he was spot on that this acidic waste, as it's being reconstituted, will hold on to a lot of water until it's able to rebalance itself, and it will, happen. So anyone who's experiencing that sort of thing, hang in there. The poisons from the acidity in the foods, they hurt us on the way in, and we usually feel that when we eat something that's not good for us, and our body kind of gets used to it if we take it on a regular basis. So we stop having these immediate reactions, but we have more symptoms that come later. But when these poisons, these acidic substances, start to get removed from the body, then there's pain. So whether it's, again, the awakening symptoms like headaches and blemishes and joint pain and the many, many myriad detox symptoms that people have, or it's something like this, which actually can be very typical. In fact, people who fast will notice this, especially because their body's just absorbing so much of the liquid from the juice fasting that and it's going right into this waste saturated saturated tissue, and you will initially just inflate, it will feel like. Just fill with water and hold that until the body can release. So what we must always remember is that it's upon the release of the reconstituted magnetized substances that we have relief. So the pain can come in various forms, while it's being awakened, while it's being reconstituted, the relief will come after. So if you don't have relief yet, it's not because you haven't awakened. It's because you haven't released. And sometimes it just bears reminding, but it's a huge relief when you feel it. And sometimes you don't even realize how deep that relief is going to be. You usually don't until it actually leaves. You think, well, maybe this is my balance point. Maybe, but then the release comes if you have a great colon therapist and you realize that it's so much deeper, and then that water leaves with the waste and your body can rebalance. It's a wonderful feeling when it happens. I don't want to take too much on that question, but it was great. And I want to thank everybody, and again, just keep on supporting each other, and know that we're going to now be able to answer your questions in this format, which is, I think, really efficacious. Okay, so on that note, happy to
thanks, Cecilia. Very good. Okay, so I'm going to go to the first question from Kate. Kate, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Yes. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just wanted to thank you all so much. And Natalia, I'm so incredibly grateful to you. I've been a poster child for your way of living for the past 3 years in my own way, and by no means perfect, but just incredibly grateful for the light and for showing me the path. So it's an honor to be on this call with you. I had a question about cleansing that I hadn't encountered, and it has a little bit of a backstory. I'm a holistic health counselor, and I recently was doing lots of research on autism and prevention, and I came across Donna Gates' work with body ecology. And I implemented some of her fermented foods and adding a little bit more meat in and that kind of thing. I kind of put myself through the diet for 7 days. And I did an enema on the seventh day, and it was just pure water. And within 5 minutes, I had the craziest reaction. I had a rash all over my body. I was super hot. My hands were swollen. My feet were swollen. And so now I'm a little terrified to do an enema. I was just wondering if you had any insight as to what might have caused that.
Okay, so a few questions. One would be, had you been moving your bowels regularly before you had the enema, or was there some severe constipation?
There was normal, but I hadn't been doing my bowel cleansing, and I've been traveling quite a bit, so...
Okay.
I wasn't as clear as normal.
And is it possible there could have been any contamination from the water itself?
It's possible. I mean, I just moved to California, and I was just using purified water, so.
Well, it doesn't seem like that would be the case, but, I mean, you would probably know it because maybe you would, you know, if it's water that you were using to drink with and do other things with, that would probably come up. There was one other question I wanted to ask you. Yes. Did you release, or did you just take the water in and did it just hold?
So I didn't release right away, and that made it even worse for me. And then without even thinking through things, I put more water in because I was like, maybe I just need a little bit more. And then I released, for sure.
And when you released a lot of matter?
Yeah, a pretty good amount.
Okay. Not to be too graphic, but was not like, sometimes people when they're doing enemas can confuse dark water with real enemas.
I've done a lot of enemas. Yeah, it was definitely matter.
Okay. The lump, bump, bump. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And then when that was passed, shall we say, was there relief of those symptoms?
They did. Well, they were pretty intense for about a half an hour. And then slowly over the next couple hours, they were, like, diminishing in size and intensity. And then, you know, by the end of the day, I didn't have any symptoms. But it was, you know, a very bright rash and swelling.
And where had you been traveling?
Paris.
Okay.
Can I, Natalia, can I jump in with a question, too? It's Anna.
Yes, by all means.
Okay. Hi, how are you? I have a quick question too. You, forgive me for not being as familiar with body ecology as maybe others are. You had said that you spent the past 7 days reintroducing more meat into your diet. Is that correct?
I did. I well, I was eating meat before when I was traveling, and then I did continue eating meat when I was doing the body ecology diet, mostly just in my afternoon meals.
So there was traveling, less bowel cleansing, a little bit less movement on your own, and a little bit more meat than usual?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the way Anna just pulls it all together. Yes, well,
I know. Thank you, Anna.
If we're basically painting a detective scene, there are many items. There are many things left behind at the scene of the crime, and Anna's just laid them out beautifully. So, I mean, it sounds to me like, without going any deeper than that, it's probably the confluence of these influences, and that was your body just, just giving a reaction from all of that. And then you haven't had any of this since, but then you've been afraid to do the enema in fear of this occurring a second time. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I would say, if this confluence isn't there any longer, so you haven't tried all these things, let's see, if it were me, I'd be curious and I'd retest without those factors. And see, and see what happens, and maybe do it with, just a little water, but do it not after you've been, definitely not after you've been constipated. Do it, you have a good movement on your own, follow it up with an enema just to feel comfortable. It's kind of like, getting back on the bike after you've just been knocked over, but don't get on the bike in the traffic. Go get on the bike on a side street where you can fall over and you'll be okay if you do. So, okay. If it were me, that's probably what I would do, but, I would say, first, check with your doctor, of course. Let him know what happened, and then see what he says, and then do what you will. I think you got the message from us. What it could be, and what you might, how you might proceed.
And I think the important thing, it's so interesting, Natalia answered the question prior to yours, about the water and awakening something and that being the problem before it's released. I think you can be very clear in that the issue is not with the water. The water isn't causing this reaction. If you're sure that you've got pure water, it's not from the water. It's from something that's been hydrated and reconstituted and potentially shifted by the water. So the bottom line is there's something there that needs to come out, and it's causing you grief.
Great. Well, I have a colonic scheduled, so that would help too. But thank you so much.
Yeah. No, it's a pleasure. The continuous flow of the colonic is always going to be superior to an enema. But all the same, we should all be very comfortable with our enema kits to be able to use them when we need them, and you don't want to be afraid of it. That would be a great pity, for sure. But, okay, carry on. Well done.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. All right, let us go to Jackie. But, Jackie, hold on one second. I'm trying to get you highlighted here. Okay, Joanna, can you highlight and unmute Jackie for us, please?
Sure.
What's that?
Yep, she's unmuted now.
Okay, awesome. Oh. Thank you. Jackie, go ahead.
Oh, okay. This my question about chocolate. Okay. Why is only dark chocolate recommended, and if one is to have a piece of chocolate, and is it safe to have 60 or 50% dark chocolate versus 70% dark chocolate? And is it harmful to our systems to have some organic milk chocolate once in a while? And last part of this question, is there a dark chocolate that tastes like milk chocolate? And if so, what is the brand?
Mm-hmm. Okay, great mix of chocolate questions. All right, so the answer about the dark chocolate is that it has less of the other stuff because it's mostly chocolate. Now, chocolate, the other stuff meaning less oils, less sugar, less milk. And, of course, you want to have less of those things, but it doesn't mean that chocolate's good for us. Chocolate is acidic. It does constipate people, so it's something to look out for, and that's why we want to keep it, minimal in the diet. But the thing is that sometimes we're looking for something sweet afterward or at some point during the day, and nothing else really is superior if we think about it. You know, unless you were to do, even, you know, carob can be used interchangeably with chocolate as well. It's just the carob can be slightly starchier, so it can give some people gas if they mix it with something that's an animal protein. But in terms of doing less percentage of chocolate, you're just going to get more of the other stuff. But if it makes you really happy to do 60% chocolate and you're doing everything else right, if you were my client, I would say go ahead and do it, but don't do it too much, too often. And if you see that it's holding back, then stop. But it's not the kind of thing that is going to be the big, you know, red flag if you're properly combining, if you're reducing, if you're eliminating. Most importantly, if you're eliminating, you'll be able to get away with it. There are so many things that you can get away with if you do everything else right. So it sounds like you really love milk chocolate. I don't know if one that tastes just like milk chocolate. Maybe somebody else does. There's a new one out that's actually made with stevia, and I'm going to send it out into my kitchen just quickly to get it. Because
I actually have the photograph you sent me of it, too. I can pull it right up on my phone.
Natalia and Anna, I tried it. The one with stevia, because Anna recommended it, you know, that maybe I'd like it. And, you know, everything is subjective. We all have different tastes, but I didn't like it. It was too hard. It wasn't creamy enough for me.
Really? Okay. Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was equal to the rose bar, and that's what I, you know, eat every night. So to me, I was really excited to see that they had a stevia sweetened chocolate. And if either of you remembers the name of it, I think somebody's eaten it from my kitchen because I can't find it. But please shout it out because I'm sure a lot of people will want to know because it's very good. I thought it was perfectly fine. It tasted to me a little bit milkier, which is what made me think of you. But other than that, unless anyone else wants to shout out,
Natalia, yeah. I think I have an idea, but you tell me if this is okay. One of my friends makes her own chocolate, like, frosting for cupcakes and things, and she uses the cacao powder, agave, coconut oil, almond butter. Oh, I know this is going to be bad, actually. Never mind. I wonder if you could do it without the almond butter. And then she uses goat milk powder. So she uses the Meyenberg powdered goat milk and mixes that all around to make it taste more like milk chocolate.
Yeah, well, you can certainly make anything that's chocolatey taste more milky, but if it's in a bar form, that's what makes it, you know, I like to get a bar that's more milky. I haven't seen one that, you know, I'm going to imagine if somebody were to make a chocolate that's sweetened with stevia and that uses almond milk or sesame milk as the milk, and, you know, just a little bit of the coconut oil, because most of these, and all the reason I'm not a fan of the raw chocolates is because they just use too much coconut oil, as I've mentioned several times. But, yes, I mean, if it's something that you're making yourself, like a chocolate milk or a hot chocolate, then you could just use more almond milk or more sesame milk or more of that milky substance. But if it's already pre-made and they're using less chocolate, chances are, unfortunately, they're using more sugar and milk.
Yeah, you know, the one that you once introduced me to, Natalia, the Newman's Organic bar was quite creamy, I felt. The Coco Pollo, by the way, is the brand that you recommended at the Health Nut. I know there's another brand that's available from Amazon that's sweetened with stevia. And I would say to you, Jackie, one of the most fun things that I've done besides tasting different goat cheeses is tasting all the different kinds of dark chocolate. If one doesn't suit you, then, you know, what fun to try another one the next night and really make yourself a dark chocolate connoisseur. It's definitely a trip worth taking.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Cool. Rapunzel.
Rapunzel's delicious.
Dark chocolate. Yeah.
Go ahead. Am I mistaken, or did you mention last week that there was a chocolate from Europe, a dark chocolate that tasted milky, or am I mistaken? Like more like a milk chocolate?
Dark chocolate from Europe. I think you're thinking of Natalia's, which is from South Africa. But he is a European chocolatier. He's Belgian. And that's the Rose Bar. Very, very creamy.
I'm going to definitely try the Rose Bar and other.
I wish we could make it. We will eventually. It would be a full-time job, seriously a full-time occupation for for us to focus on the chocolate. If we did, if we had somebody on that, we could probably bring the price down. Unfortunately, the price is established simply because the shipping is what it is. But if we had bulk and we were doing a few other things, we could get around that and distribute it and ship it from America, which would bring it down. So I apologize that the sticker price is what it is. I think it was $7.50 or something per bar, which on the one hand sounds expensive. On the other hand, a lot of these raw food bars are that and more. And I think anybody who's tasted the Rose Bar will attest it is absolutely superior. I can't take credit for it being so superior because we have a master chocolatier who I discovered from tasting every single chocolate bar I can get my hands on around the world in all my travels. And when I tasted this, I just stopped. My journey, my search was over. And I found it. And really, it's my madness. I just supply it for myself. I mean, I feel like I have my own chocolatier, and it's great that, we can make it available to all of you. But it's just one of those things that even if nobody ever buys it, I like to have my Rose Bar every night with my family name on it. So it's one of those kind of quirky things. But if you get to taste it, I think you'll agree. One other question. No, great. And from the community, there was one other mention that I wanted to address that somebody asked about how to get rid of cellular memory. And I thought that was a really important one to address. And it coincides with the water because I'm sure many of you are familiar with Masaru Emoto's work on water and what his research has told us about how we can impress upon ourselves more harmony because we're made of water. And I won't go into the research. If you're interested, have a look. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. But I want to talk about cellular memory in that similar light because there are ways to heal cellular memory from within through all the detox strategies that we do. One of the people who responded mentioned Rolfing, which is a very powerful technique, which works on the connective tissue, which stores the memories. And it's been well established that the body is the subconscious mind. So we hold all of our subconscious in our actual physicality. So working physically is a powerful way to remove bad cellular memory, or to not activate the bad cellular memory, or negative cellular memory, I should say, so that the positive cellular memory can come forward. So those are all the things that we do in terms of detoxification, cleansing the tissue, and things like Rolfing and movement are all very powerful things that we can do from that perspective. But then we also have the ability to transform ourselves because we are made so much of water. And Mr. Emoto's work has proven that. So I would say to whoever asked that question, whoever has the same desire, which I think so many of us who get into this work do, because you start to realize, oh my gosh, I've been carrying around not just this accumulation of waste matter, but this accumulation of experience, both, a real mixed bag of things that have been harmful, things that have been, blissful. Of course, none of the harmful things make us stronger and teach us the things that we couldn't learn otherwise. But from that perspective, if we really can make it our purpose to meditate on the light, to sync up with harmonious things, our cellular structure will naturally start to take the form of those beautiful thoughts, of those beautiful actions, and that which we focus our thoughts on. Our thoughts come with little beings attached to them, little entities, if you will. And it sounds kind of creepy, and it is creepy. It can be creepy, especially if your thoughts are negative, if your memories are painful. They will hold these little living things with them. I don't know if you want to imagine a little kind of a monster that's attached to a negative thought, or maybe it's just a whatever you come up with. But by the same token, our positive thoughts, our beautiful thoughts, our dreams of what can be in our lives and what can be today in our lives also bring with them living forms. And those are angelic beings, and they can work to protect us and transform everything from our cell structure to our home and our family dynamic, our relationships. So it's the good news is that it's really doable. the more challenging news is that it takes a great deal of concentration, and it means that we must be extra vigilant over our thoughts. But it can be done, and this is how. So maybe we'll talk about that more if people are interested down the road.
Definitely, Natalia. Okay, good. Jackie, thank you. And
oh, thank you so much, Natalia and Anna. I really appreciate it, and I will be ordering the rose bars later.
Let us know you like them.
Natalia,
okay.
Do you have time for one more?
Sorry?
Do you have time for one more? I know it's close to your...
Yes, it is. Yeah, baby's not crying yet. Go ahead.
Okay, good. All right. Anna, let's go to you. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Hi, everyone, and I'm really excited to be on the call, as always. And just to give a little bit of background, I've been doing this work for over 3 years now, obviously gradually getting into it, and I recently moved from San Francisco to New York. And the morning after I had moved into my new place, I came down with a really severe kind of head cold, really severe sinus infection. And it hasn't, like, the mucus buildup in my head hasn't really gone away this whole time, and it's been over a month and a half, maybe about a month and a half now. So I was wondering, I have two theories. Of course, I realize that there is change in the environment. But in the same time, in doing this work, I've been looking a lot at healing emotionally. And growing up, I was kind of taught to not speak about my pain or not ever let anybody know that I wasn't doing well. So obviously being in the place where I am now, I have been working on speaking about things that are on my heart or on my mind or addressing things vocally that come up from my childhood. And I was wondering if that could be a symptom of unlocking the... or unblocking the energy of my throat chakra. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, the lungs are the seat of sadness in the body, and when we start to release this, it can often come up in the form of mucus. And the fact that that's what your inclination is to think it's very likely to be means that it's probably connected. It may be both factors. Definitely. It sounds very, very plausible. Yeah, it sounds like you're doing good work with that, too. And please, next time, Anna, you're in Health Nuts and you see me, please say hello.
I know, you were already being cool.
Okay, I was overstimulated already,
so...
I was so delighted. I would have been really, really delighted to see you. It's also it's a big change. Moves like this bring up a lot. You're also reacclimating to a whole, to go from one place to another. I mean, that's not like a big deal, like L.A. to New York, but to make a move like that, not just emotionally, but physiologically, you're having to reacclimate to a whole different vibration. And that can be, that can throw the body physically out of whack. I mean, everything that happens to us experientially is going to happen, and it's going to manifest somehow in the body. And I think this may sound really far-fetched, but I actually think that's one of the reasons for nausea in the early stages of pregnancy, because, bear with me, this actually is connected, because, you're going to share your body with another soul. There has to be a bit of a huge shift that comes about in that, and depending on how in sync you are with that other soul or what it means, it's a really big shift, and this is a big shift too, and you're addressing all these new things in your life. The air in New York right now, I think, has been very poor. I think there's a lot of just a lot of soot and grime that the good, strong body is constantly purging it, so you might expect to have more of that as long as you live here. I know that my system stays really clear, but I find I'm often, you know, just blowing my nose to kind of get, like, the not because I can't breathe clearly, because my pathways are very, very clear, but it's like my system is trying to just make sure that everything, that there's just so much in the filter, and the filter has to stay clean. So person to person, it's going to vary, you know, but if you have a really good clean filter, it's like a baby. They'll need to purge. They'll be pushing the stuff out faster the healthier they are. So in the beginning, babies get lots of colds and flus, but later they get something more extreme. So if you're pushing the stuff out, it could just be a factor of living in the city. But it shouldn't be as extreme as it is right now. It's not like there are a few factors happening at once.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much.
And Anna, I just wanted to just confirm that I've noticed a similar emotional process for myself, that whenever I'm working through and shedding, you know, old programming and working through old emotional conditioning, that I definitely get more mucusy. I mean, it's almost like, okay, time to let all that stuff go, time to let it go. So it's, you know, I think it's our body's response to that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And Jackie, did you raise your hand again? I see your hand up. I'm not sure if that was from before.
No, I didn't, Anna.
Okay. All right. And then we also have Rebecca. I see that your hand's up, but I'm not sure if you mean to have it up because you have a 3 instead of a 1. Rebecca, are you there? Okay, I'm thinking that was a mistake, probably. Rebecca, if you would like to raise your hand, go ahead and press 1. Okay, and then same thing with Daniela. Daniela, did you have a question? Okay, I think we're getting lots of pocket hands raised. Okay. Let's go to Bruna. Bruna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi. Finally being able to jump in the call. And my thing is very simple. I'm completely out of whack. I also just moved. Everything is crazy in my life, and I cannot seem to go back to eating properly. What is the one thing that I could do to put me back on track?
I want to start.
Well, first of all, I would sit down with a piece of paper and I'd ask myself, what are my limitations? What do I find easy? And what do I find very challenging? And then from there, in terms of a hierarchy of what to apply to your life from the basics, if we're just talking purely dietetically right now, then I would start with making sure that the food combining is on track. And even if you have to start with the major food combining stuff and then work your way toward the more, the more detailed things. So just making sure that, going back. Sometimes even people who get really deeply into this get off track and they have to go back to the beginning, the basics. And it's totally fine. No one should ever be ashamed about it if you're even at that stage. But going back to not mixing fleshes and starches, getting fruit out of the picture. Getting fruit out of the picture, period. If you can do it for now, that would be great because it just gets in the way, especially if you've gotten off track. There's probably some yeast buildup, and then if there's, hitting the accumulation system, fruit, big nightmare. Just strike that off your list. I would also strike nuts off your list. And then I would start to look at your starches and making sure that they're, at the end of the day, if at all, and preferably only the best quality ones. So once you have that accomplished, which is, pretty big in and of itself, then you look at your juicing, because that's going to keep you on track because it's going to feel so good, and B, you're going to need the shot in the arm that it provides. And it's going to, if you can get yourself to just commit to juicing until lunch, or even if it's juicing until 10 and you work your way up to 10:30, 11, 11:30, et cetera, even if it means having a little bit more juice, just get yourself to the point where you're having, and this is step two or three. This doesn't have to be step one, okay? Get yourself to the point where you're back to two meals instead of three meals a day if you've gotten off to that point. I don't know the specifics, but once you do that, then at least you're not taking in excessive amounts of food because we eat too much. I mean, even last night I was looking at my plate of food, and I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. I eat one meal a day, but it's still is too much food. I was talking to somebody, I don't know if they're on the call, it could have been Joanna or Anna, but saying that, you know, there are these indigenous people that eat root vegetables in the winter. It's one particular root vegetable they eat because it's the only thing that grows, and they chew it, they spit it out, and they chew it again because they need to get the nutrients from it. And what do? We just kind of shovel it all in and get more. So basically, I'm just adding that in because two meals a day is a lot of food, and it's enough food. And just working yourself to that point would be wonderful no matter where you are in this journey. And so that would be sort of steps one, two, three, and then implicit in step one would be to remove the big offenders. So, you know, get rid of anything that obviously doesn't belong in, you know, in a clean diet, the packaged food, the processed food, all that stuff. I mean, we're not, I kind of imagine that we're on this call, we're just kind of beyond that without sounding aloof or like too much like we're above it all. Because sometimes, you know, people do fall into things even after getting pretty far. So I don't mean that in a disrespectful kind of way because people are where they are. But getting that out of the way so that the food that does go in can be ordered and can be meaningful. And then what I would really do is I'd focus on what you love to eat. So instead of looking at food and saying, this is what I'm supposed to eat, think, what do I love in this category of foods? And what do I look for? So I'll just, you know, personally, I love hearty foods, I love hearty portions, and I love, you know, water-containing juicy salads, but I like them to be sweet. So there's certain things that I go for. What is it that you go for? What do you love? What will make it fun for you and exciting and pleasurable? Big P, pleasurable, to undertake this in a powerful new way. Because that's what's going to really motivate you. Oh, I get to eat that again today. I love that. But, and yet that's in a category that, you know, it's in the cornucopia of things that we can joyfully partake of. So I would say those are great starting points. And Anna, Amanda, Joanna, anyone wants to jump in?
Hi, it's Anna. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can, Anna.
Oh, great. Okay, I was just going to say, it sounds like you've gotten a little bit discouraged and you're feeling a little bit, maybe a little bit of self-recrimination and a little bit of anger about, I can't remember how you described it, getting off course. I think there has to be an emotional reset as well. And I don't know what brought you to this work in the first place, the first time that you went through it and that you got really clean, you got to a place that you were really excited about, but it's time to revisit whatever that was. So whatever lit your fire, and I can remember exactly the day that my fire was lit, and it was the day of my first colon hydrotherapy treatment. And that was the day that I said, I'm on the wagon. It's official. I'm here. This is what I'm committing to. This is what I want to do for myself. And I can promise you that whatever it was that switched on and lit your fire in the first place, that's got to be one of your first steps is I put me first. I'm doing this for me. No more of this funny business. I'm committing this going forward.
I love it, Anna. That's great. You're on the wagon.
It's
I love that. It's like, I'm here. I'm doing it. That's it. There's no argument with myself. It's done.
Exactly. And, you know, I have to highly recommend to everyone out there, there's a book for addiction treatment called Rational Recovery, and it makes the difference between an impulse-driven thought and a thought that you actually make for yourself very clear. But that's the bottom line is that it sounds like you're unhappy with where you are. So right now, today, on this call with us, with Natalia Rose, you can say to yourself, this is my turning point. I decide from here on out that I'm committing to myself in this way.
Yeah, it is totally emotional. It's totally emotional. I'm too much. Too much emotion.
Well, you just got a private consultation with Natalia Rose, and you are on your way, and you've made the decision. So congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Bruna. Okay. Anjali, am I saying your name right?
Yeah, it's Anjali.
Anjali. I think I do that every time. Sorry.
No,
I'll get it right one of these days.
I'm going to have to just jump in for a second because I do have to jump, but I'm really going to make a huge effort to be on the next call, and I thought if anybody has questions they want you know, specifically for me to answer on the next time I'm on the call, which is entirely dependent upon my baby girl and what her schedule is right now, but I really do want to be. Please just email it directly to joanna@detoxtheworld.com, joanna@detoxtheworld.com. And, ladies, I will leave you to it. Thank you so much. Lots and lots of love to everyone.
Thanks,
Natalia. Thank you, Natalia. And please kiss that beautiful girl for all of us.
Okay. Thank you. I will, I'll listen to the rest later. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy. Bye.
Bye. Hey, Anjali, how are you?
Anjali.
Doing well, Anna. How are you?
Well, it's so nice to hear your voice. What can we help you with?
Well, it's weird because I don't like to bring up like conflicting information ever. So I've just been toying with this one idea, hearing this discussion about how fat can be contributing to candida, and that's more.
Yes, thank you. I'm so glad you brought this up. Continue.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to hear more of your thoughts on that because it makes sense intuitively to me, but I don't want to bring in like a lot of other information that isn't in line with, I don't know, what we're doing. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you visit any of the Candida websites, they're very emphatic about that as well. So, you know, here are my thoughts on that. There's a couple of them. Number one is that this shouldn't be a high-fat way of eating. You know, Detox for Women especially asks that you set aside nuts because of their density and because of their fungal and yeast feeding properties. It asks that you set aside concentrated oils, including the extra virgin olive oil and all of the other oils, with the exception of maybe a tiny little bit of butter or coconut butter for cooking. So really the only fats that you're looking at are if you're eating fish, if you're eating eggs, avocados, and goat cheese. So this is a really, really small amount of fat in the context of a day that's filled with non-fat containing raw vegetables. So if you're having a giant salad with cucumbers and lettuce and lemon juice and a little bit of goat cheese or about a half an avocado on top, it's not a high-fat diet in the context of the percentage of what you're eating. You mentioned, I believe you wrote in about this, how the fat content in terms of calories was a higher percentage, but we don't worry about calories and we don't think about calories in the context of the day. We worry about water content. So the amount of water containing non-fat-based things that you're consuming throughout the day is really, really high in comparison with this little sprinkling of fat in the form of avocado or goat cheese. Avocado is certainly not going to be a candida feeder. Goat cheese, we do not pretend is a health generator. It's there like a little bit of dark chocolate to keep you happy and to keep you motivated. And that brings me to the second part of the candida idea, which is that if you don't stick to a yeast-conscious approach to eating, you're not going to cleanse anything, as we know. So it has to be livable. So I love the websites that basically urge you to live on, you know, Brussels sprouts and lettuce. Well, maybe you could do that for about a week, but a week isn't long enough to get deep-seated yeast and fungal growth out of the intestinal tract, the bloodstream, the bone structure. It's just not long enough. So what you need is something that you can stick to. And if by sprinkling a couple of little items in there that have a fat content, you're happy, you are going to go much, much further in the battle of winning your body back from yeast and fungal growth because you're going to be cleansing for much longer. So that's a big part of that. And then the last part is just that the thing that you need to worry about is those processed starches, the white starches and the sugars, not the fats. And I can tell you this from personal experience. I can tell you it from learning from Natalia and Gil Jacobs, and I can tell you from, you know, a lot of clients. Right after you eat a sugary or a starch-based thing, you feel why I say that, and I'm sure you know what I mean. It's like there's either a bloating or there's what I call awakening the T-Rex, which is when you are suddenly insatiably ravenous for more starch or sugar-based things, which is probably a candida-driven urge. So I would say the little bit of fat that you're getting from the avocado, from a little bit of butter or coconut butter, and from some goat cheese in the context of a big pile of vegetables and raw juices all day is totally fine. It's not going to be candida feeding. And while, you know, with respect to, I think you're referring to the 80-10-10 book, with respect to that book, it's a different context. You know, it's a different lifestyle, and so it doesn't really apply here.
Yeah.
Does that all
okay.
make sense to you intuitively?
Totally, and that's exactly, I love how you say, how you just said everything, how it's about water content, not about calories. I knew that already, but all the science gets up in my head, and I question, but not enough to... Like, I know what I'm doing feels so intuitively right, and I just can stick with that. But I wanted to hear your thoughts. And you're right. I mean, I probably couldn't stick with that long term. It doesn't resonate with me, but this lifestyle does. So I'll just stick with this.
And the other thing is that, you know, I mean, just knowing you, you have such an inquiring mind. I think it's always relevant to explore new things. You know, I mean, there doesn't have to be an end of the line. Nobody has all the answers. So I love when you bring up extra stuff.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, don't ever hesitate. This is for everybody. Don't ever hesitate to bring up conflicting viewpoints because, I mean, everyone comes across them. And so I think, you know, feel free to ask your questions honestly and candidly.
Yeah, and also, you know, there's research being done every day and books being written that Natalia and I and Amanda and Joanna might not have encountered yet. So, you know, we love to hear this stuff. We're just like you. We're science nerds.
All right. Thank you both so much.
Thank you,
Anjali.
Okay. Azure. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you? Sorry, I just dropped you all, literally. Dropped the phone. It's interesting that topic got brought up because I'm finding that a lot of people are getting really into this paleo eating, which we all know is very meat heavy and very kind of, well, we don't need to unpack why it's not necessarily life giving, but some of the overlap that I'm seeing in some people who are following similar to this diet is just the need for more healthy fats. So like you were just mentioning avocados, fish, goat cheese, but also kind of swaying into the, like using almond for baking or almond butter for a snack and things like that. Do you feel like that's something that to encourage people in transition or something that you've found people can find they reintroduce after a season of cleansing and it doesn't affect them as much?
Yeah, that's a great question.
My husband and I are rose cleansing this month, so we're on day 26 of Juice Till Dinner and definitely sort of, yeah, feeling great, but also, you know, thinking about that stuff along the lines of, okay, you know, maintainable 60 years of life. People are asking those kinds of questions. What are you going to reintroduce? How are you going to, you know, and of course we feel fine saying maybe we won't reintroduce anything, but they're coming at us with questions like that and want to give good context for, you know, when it's appropriate.
So you want to know how to answer the questions about using fat therapeutically as a healer.
Or just do they even have a place like the almond butters
okay.
and things like
yeah.
that? Obviously, I give them to my daughter, but, you know, beyond, or even for us, you know, or is that off limits for us forever? Like, or is
right.
that something we have to take?
Okay,
take
so there's a
take?
Bunch of different parts to this question. The first part is, in terms of using fats therapeutically, you know, I go back to what Natalia reminded me the last call, which is that all of life on the planet is dependent on the sun. And so that the way that we eat is centered around life force energy. So, you know, the chlorophyll and the vibration from these raw living foods, which is definitely less in the denser foods, including the nuts and the fats. And, you know, the thing about the oils, the biggest problem with the oils is their density, their lack of water content, and also that they're not in a natural state. I mean, it is a processed food because it's been expelled from its natural carrier. You know, you're not eating a couple of olives. You're guzzling, you know, something that's been expelled from the olives. It's not coming in the water-containing fruit. So that's, you know, that's a problem with oils. And the reason that we should never look to oils as a health generator, what we look to for health generation are the water-containing, life-force-giving foods, which it sounds like you've already got well into wraps. You know, the second part of this question is, for me, experimentation and learning what works for your body and never taking an outside word for something, because your body is your test tube, and figuring out what keeps you excited about your day is your work. So can things like almond butter have a place in the lifestyle? Yes. I would say everything that's not a processed food can have a happy place in the lifestyle if it's done correctly. So that means properly combined, seldom, in the context of a water-rich day, so your juices, your salads, you know, were you to put in, if you're still having lunch, one day a week where you have a nut and seed-based salad for lunch instead of an avocado salad for lunch, were you to put in Natalia's banana tahini ice cream following a sesame tahini salad dressing for dinner one day a week? Absolutely. Were you to put in a mid-afternoon snack, especially for a child or somebody who's feeling an emotional need for a mid-afternoon snack, a transitioner of celery sticks with almond butter? Absolutely. It can work if it's properly combined, so it's easily digestible. If it's in the company of a big pile of water-containing vegetables, and if it's seldom, so, you know, doing the same thing every day with very rich nut-based foods would probably start to clog you up a little. And then see what happens. If the day after you have a meal like that, you don't have a bowel movement, you maybe get a little bit of a rash or some other kind of evidence that things are a little backed up, maybe some gas, there's your answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that help you? So I think what I would encourage you to do is decide, is it something that I really need? Is it something that I really want? Anna's telling me it's not a health generator, but just like the other non-health generators that we keep to keep the lifestyle fun, like goat cheese, it can have a place. Is it one of those things that I want to have a place? If so, what's the best possible way to do it? Let me try it. After you try it, how do I feel? How did that affect me? Great. Okay. Green light forward. Not so good. Okay. Maybe that's not when I visit often.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks. Good to hear your voice.
You're welcome. But don't get tricked into, I mean, it sounds like you're already not and you're already questioning that. Don't get tricked into thinking that putting something in that way is going to be a life generator. The only time putting something in is a life generator is when it's got that life force energy.
Right. I think it's more the maintainable lifestyle desire and helping people understand that it's something that's very doable when, you know, of course, they're intrigued by, I can eat bacon and meatballs on the paleo diet and you want me to have, you know, it's like, no, you can have some almond butter and that would be great too. So.
Firm believer that there's room for everything as long as it's a non-processed food. So it's in its purest possible state. There can be room for everything. You know, I've had clients who just cannot give up their chicken. Okay, so you have grass-fed or free-range chicken on a protein night after a big raw salad once a month. There's your chicken.
Right.
You know, there's absolutely room for the things that you love if they're going to keep you loving this lifestyle for longer.
Yeah, super. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Anna, we're basically
at the end. And last time I received a question about the perimeter walk that I described, that if you do, it can definitely energize you throughout the day and perhaps lead to you needing less sleep at night. And someone wanted me to explain that a little bit more deeply. So I'd be happy to do that now, unless anyone has any other questions. Go ahead and press 1 if you have another question. If not, then I'm going to go into that, a description of what that walk is.
I'm so happy that people asked about this, Amanda, because I mean, this is, I think it's kind of a crucial thing and pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me explain how I was taught and how we actually did it. And it was in a group of about 5 women. You could definitely do this alone, but I think the power of doing it in a group is obviously just kind of magnified. But what we did is we started with some breathing. So before we even started on the walk, we did the really deep belly breathing that I explained on the Rose Cleanse, where when you breathe in, you're pressing your belly out, and when you breathe out, you're pressing your belly in. So it was a series of breathing just to really get centered. And then what we did was drew our attention into our heart. And this is really a practice of getting in connection with the heart and tapping into the heart wisdom. And researchers are now finding, and this is something that the ancients have known for a very long time, but that the heart is really the seat of where our wisdom is and our intuition, and along with, for women, the womb, which is sort of like what supports the heart. So the womb as like our power center, and for men it's called the hara. And then our heart is really where our intuition, our wisdom lies. So practices of intentionally getting in touch with your heart are extremely helpful. And so what you do is you really just, again, you center yourself with your breathing and then bring your attention into your heart. And when you do that, you'll probably feel a tingling, an aching, an energy that is kind of swirling around. It may be hard for you to really feel it at first, but the more you practice this, the more you'll start to really be able to actually feel that energy in your chest or in the region of your heart. And scientists are finding that the heart actually has more electrons than the brain. And so the fact that there's actual intelligence there is very well documented. So obviously connecting to that, especially as women, is extremely powerful for all of us. So again, bring your attention to the heart. And then when you're on the walk, basically find somewhere in nature that is beautiful for you. If you can be barefoot, that's ideal. If that's not practical, then you don't need to be. And then you walk extremely slowly and deliberately. And if you are in a group, if you're with a friend, it's a silent walk, and you're about 20 feet away from each other. And if someone in front of you stops, you stop behind them. And you just walk, and this sounds very crazy, but you walk very slowly, and as you pass trees and as you walk on the grass, as you see flowers, anything that grabs your attention, you're very consciously connecting with that, sending energy to it through your heart, and then seeing the energy come back to you through whatever that is. So as you're walking by a tree, you send your heart energy to the tree, and you feel the energy come back from the tree. And you'll see that this will start to take either kind of like a figure eight sort of energy motion between your heart and the tree in a kind of a figure eight motion, or it could be a circular motion. And really what you're doing is you're tapping into that power of nature. When people say commune with nature, I would always say, what do you mean commune with nature? Like, what am I going to do, go out and just talk to trees and birds and stuff? But this is what it is. It's actually a very conscious exchange of energy. And then just allow yourself to be in that state that we were all in when we were children, when you would go and just be outside for hours. If you did this, I remember doing this, totally losing track of time, totally losing track of everything around me, and really just being in that space. And so you just do this. You walk around whatever it is. If you choose a circle or you choose the perimeter of your backyard, and we this yard that we did this in is 7 acres, and we just walked around the periphery, and it took us almost 2 hours. That is how slowly and deliberately we were walking. And then after the walk, we all shared our experiences, and it was so profound, just how much we were able to get from this very, very, very conscious act of walking and communing with nature. And so that's all it is, and I think that you'll find that the colors are more vivid. Some people were getting a lot of messages from just this process, a lot of transmissions or downloads or insights or aha moments. So again, I highly recommend it. Even if like on your lunch break at work, if you could do it, if you can find time to do it whenever possible, it's very, very, very invigorating and energizing. Does anyone have any questions about that? You can go ahead and press 1 if you do. If not, we're going to go ahead and wrap up.
That was amazing, Amanda. Thank you so much. I always forget how much I'm missing living in the city. And you really,
yeah.
You know, those of us who are city dwellers, we really have to find the time to do those things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Hudson River Park, you could totally do it. You could do it in Central Park. I mean, you're going to have to be okay with people thinking, well, whatever. You're just walking around slow. Who cares?
There's a lot more crazy on the street than that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I honestly think people could find a place to do it anywhere. But yeah, and it's just the group that I'm getting to study with. It's a lot of these are based. A lot of these practices that we're doing are based on the ancient mystery schools of Egypt, and so these are the things that the women that were in like the Temple of Isis and you know a lot of those old mystery schools. This is what they were learning to do to really connect and tap into the wisdom of Mother Earth. And we all can do this. So if anyone tries it on, please share next time because we'd love to hear your experiences. All right. Oh, okay. And then, sorry, before we go, someone asked where they can access old calls. And these are now posted in the community. If you go to Q&A in the community, that's where Anna has all of her, Anna and Joanna actually now answer all of their questions from the community. But at the top of that are all the archives of these calls. So you'll find that there. And then I also wanted to let you know that Natalia and I are going to be starting a call for Life Force families soon. So this will be, any questions that, you have around children, around preparing your body for children, around pregnancy, anything that has to do with the family, we will be starting another live call that you are all very welcome to join. And more to come on that. I think that's it. Anna, you have anything else?
That is it. Oh, no, just one last thing, which is just that, you know, I noticed that most of the callers said somewhere in their question, my intuition tells me this, and every time you guys are spot on. So
yes.
Sounds like... some self-trust needs to be going on out there because people seem to really be on the right track, and I think we question ourselves a lot.
Yep.
I was impressed.
That's heart wisdom at its best, and you're all definitely, I know, I love when you say that. I think we have been conditioned to then question that and think that maybe we're making that up and that's probably not real. But that is, when you are having those instincts, that is what's real for sure. So, okay, thanks everybody, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Anna.